Welcome to the show, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Paul Nichols. I'm your host. This is It's Your Money, the radio slash that. It's not a radio podcast anymore, is it? The podcast that's designed to pull back the curtain and expose the truth about money and investing. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. If you're checking us out for the first time, welcome. We're going to do our market update, which is what I normally endeavor to do whenever I do a podcast. And we have a market update, a very nice market update, actually, as of May 28th, right after Memorial Day. This would have been business close May 28th. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the market update, how the market's doing globally around the world. I also would like to chat with you a little bit about a couple items that I picked up here. It's been about a month since I did my last podcast, and I've picked up a couple nuggets that I feel that are the types of things that people ask us occasionally. Social Security-related questions, and then one about returns, and how does one verify the authenticity of one's returns? Because oftentimes, a lot of the stuff we see published out there doesn't seem to jive with the math from our statement. So we're going to talk about those few areas. Again, this is Paul Nichols, the investor coach. I'm the president of Financial Abundance, which is a registered investment advisory firm located in State College, Pennsylvania. That's Happy Valley, for those of you that may not be familiar. State College is right in the middle of the state. It's where Penn State University resides. It is an academic community, wonderful community. If you ever get a chance to stop in Happy Valley, come check it out. It's a great, great place to visit, great place to live. And I'm excited to come to you on a regular basis and share this kind of information. Years ago, when I decided to pursue the financial area as a career, one of the things that I found was a tremendous amount of information out there that often intimidated even those that were knowledgeable. And through the years, I've realized that investing is really not that difficult. It's relatively simple. I mean, there's only three rules to investing. There's only two to dieting. Of course, dieting is a little more difficult to be disciplined at. However, years ago when I realized all this information and I was being baffled by it, as most people are, and most people are terribly confused by the financial arena, they're intimidated by it, they're often afraid to ask basic questions because they feel like it's something they should know. They feel like everyone who looks at a Bloomberg or one of these financial TV shows that they know what all the tickers mean and all the symbols mean. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the vast majority of people don't, especially those not in the industry. So several years ago, I decided that I need to do a market update because there's really no one source, although it's getting better now with technology, but there's no one source that one can go to and find out how the market's doing totally, globally, internationally, small companies, large companies, all the different asset classes that would make up a well-diversified portfolio. So I'm going to lay those asset classes on you right now. Let me get my spectacles here, as well as the year-to-date growth we've had in those different areas of the market. And you should be able to, based on that information, ascertain where your portfolio should be based on 2013 global returns and not just pieces. See, the fear a lot of people are not aware of, but the fear for me as an investor coach, a registered investment advisory, the president of this firm, is that the vast majority of people are baffled by finance and don't take the time to try to get educated, feeling that they would fail if they attempted to do so. So we make it very simple. We believe that investing is relatively simple, as I mentioned. There's only three rules. But it's important to know how the global marketplace is doing occasionally, because this should be indicative, it should mirror, it should replicate, it should be very close to what a well-diversified portfolio is doing as well. And I hope you're diversified, ladies and gentlemen, because it is pretty exciting where the market is right now. There's only one asset class that is in the red. Everything else is in the black. And in the black, quite handsomely. It's a beautiful thing. Market update, May 28th, 2013, as of May 28th, business close. I'm recording this the 29th. FYI. Let's start with small to mid-sized companies in the United States. That's measured by the Russell 2500 Index. And small to mid-cap, predominantly growth companies in the U.S., year-to-date, 18%. Ladies and gentlemen, extraordinary. It's awesome. Small is doing well. Most people don't have small in their portfolios. At least that's what we observe. There's reasons for that that get into cost, internal cost, bid-ask spread, and other types of things. But unfortunately, we rarely see most people have true small companies in their portfolio. But those of you that do, yay, team, happy days, touchdown, score, goal, 18% year-to-date. Let's move on to small to micro. Small to micro. These aren't just small to mid. These are small to micro. Just shy of 18 as well in the Russell 2000 index. The Russell 1000, which measures large cap value. These are not growth companies, but value companies. You see, there's a risk premium. The academics and the science tells us is available by owning value companies over growth companies. Just like there's a risk premium by owning small over large and being in the market over being in cash, for example. I just explained the three-factor model for those of you that may not be aware of it. But the Russell 1000 large value companies, not growth companies, but value, according to the Russell 1000 value index, is 18.77. I believe that's our winner chicken dinner. Russell 1000 large value companies are the leading asset class for 2013 as of May 28th. How about the Russell 2000, which measures value small companies, very small cap companies? And that's 16.6%. So Russell 2000 value, 16.6%. Ladies and gentlemen, wow, that's exciting. I hope you're in it. This is as of May, the end of May 2013. And let's round out the United States with the S&P 500, which is widely regarded as the best single gauge of the U.S. equity market. And that represents roughly 500 leading U.S. companies, predominantly large growth. And year-to-date, that's 16.4%. So ladies and gentlemen, in the U.S., the laggard is large growth at 16.4%, and the winner chicken dinner is Russell 1000 or large cap value. So large is winning on both sides, but the value is doing about 2% higher than the growth. This, again, is why you own value as well as growth companies. Let's slide right over to international. We have the Morgan Stanley Capital International World Index. This is a free-floating, adjusted, weighted index that is designed to measure the equity performance of developed markets. For example, Australia, Denmark, Greece, Ireland, Netherlands, Portugal, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, UK, just to name a few. And year-to-date, it's just shy of 12%, 11.85% year-to-date, May 28th ending. And it's doing very well. It's double digits. It's the only double-digit area in international to the developed markets. The emerging markets, measured by the Morgan Stanley Capital International Emerging Market Index, is it's lagging, actually. It's our dog of the day here. It's a negative 2.31%. Having a lot of issues with some of the emerging markets with the debt loads and so on and so forth. So right now, the emerging markets, political issues, emerging markets are lagging right now. Although they are generally the leader in the international arena, especially small emerging. Let's go on to the Morgan Stanley Capital International Europe, Australia, and Far East Index. And we are roughly just shy of 8% there. So ladies and gentlemen, when we look at the market update as of May 28th, 2013, it is impressive. I hope that you're in it. I hope that you haven't been listening to the fear mongers that are saying get out and buy gold or all the new talk now. The new thing you're hearing is it going to end? Oh my goodness, get out. I mean, I'm this henny penny stuff over and over and over. If you go back and listen to old podcasts and stuff we did in 08, we talked about this. This type of thing, you know, blips in the news, and you just got to keep your sanity here. And, you know, we believe knowledge trumps emotion, And that's why we try to educate and inform people. And you can get more education from us, by the way, if you'd like to reach out through our website or otherwise. But let me move on to my other couple nuggets that I wanted to lay on you. How to estimate Social Security benefits. We deal with a lot of pre-retired and retired folks. That happens to be my forte, income distribution, that is, taking income in retirement. And one of the questions we get quite frequently is about Social Security benefits, okay? And I can't say that there's a hard rule. I'm not going to get into the rules here. I'm just going to give you some up-to-date data on Social Security for those of you that may not be aware of what's going on. I found this to be very interesting. Let me give you some data that I thought was just curious, interesting and curious in nature. My curious nature is what drives me to find this stuff out. But the average Social Security benefit per retiree, and this is a very recent report, while the maximum was $1,230 per month. So the average Social Security benefit per retiree is $1,230 per month, while the maximum benefit is $2,513. That's $2,513. So about 30 grand a year. So 14 to 30 grand a year is roughly about where you see, well, that's the average. So average to the high. Okay, how dependent are Americans on Social Security income and retirement? How dependent are they? Wow, these numbers are staggering. Not this one so much. 9 out of 10 individuals age 65 or older receive benefits. Of course, that's understandable. Why isn't it 10 out of 10? I don't know. That's another curious question. Social Security benefits represent about 39% of the income of the elderly. That's going to gradually change and shift as more defined benefit plans kick in for baby boomers. But right now, it's about 40%. Among elderly Social Security beneficiaries, 53% of married couples and 74% of unmarried persons receive 50% or more of their income from Social Security. Wow, that's staggering. That's an awful high number. 53% of married couples and 74% of unmarried couples, over half of their retirement income is Social Security. That's why reverse mortgages are so popular. That's a sad state of affairs that the government had to come up with the program to allow people to keep their homes long term. By the way, reverse mortgages are a government program. If you're not familiar with that, you should check out some of our coaching that we have on that. And among elderly Social Security beneficiaries, 23% of married couples and about 46% of unmarried couples rely on Social Security as 90% of their income. Wow, that's mind-boggling. Here's a tidbit that I think will help most of you, a little nugget that I picked up here. Recently, as of some budgetary issues, I've learned that the Social Security does not send out their annual earnings and benefits statement. As of March 2011, apparently, due to some budget cuts. However, you can go to the Social Security website, and there's a retirement estimator that will look at a number of different scenarios as to you can plug in different scenarios as to when someone might want to start taking their Social Security. I have my own theories on that. If you're still working, it may be smarter to defer it. If not, you may want to take it earlier. Sometimes there's a higher earner amongst a couple. Maybe they should defer it, and the lower income earner should take it sooner. There's all kinds of different scenarios. So this is where you might need some coaching. If you need some coaching, get a hold of our office or someone, a registered investment advisor in your area, fee-only advisor that can help you with that, and they can coach you up on that type of stuff. So I would encourage all of you to definitely go to the Social Security website and make sure that that the information is correct. And the primary thing I would encourage you to focus on is this nugget right here: missing annual earnings and benefits. So I noticed, this has been a few years back, I had gotten one of my Social Security statements, and I realized that it had a few years of income missing from it. Well, I was concerned about this because obviously that goes into the pot overall. So some letters might need to be written and some follow-up in order to clarify that. So it would be important. I strongly encourage you to manage this part of your life. Those of us that are a little bit proactive do not have to be reactive. I often say to my my children, a lack of planning on your part does not create a crisis on my part. So I would encourage you to be a little bit proactive, especially those of you that are 10 to 15 years out, hey, it's a minor thing, a few minutes on the website. Let me go to my last nugget today. And this is a quite substantial nugget that I'm going to share with you. And it's something that a lot of people may not be familiar with as it relates to investment performance standards and how they're measured out there. So I want to share something with you and then give you some input on this. And I'm going to encourage you, if you're working with people, especially when they're giving you their returns and so on, I want to encourage you to make sure that they're compliant with the new standards that are out there. And what I'm talking about is a Global Investment Performance Standards. Now, this was first introduced in 1999, Global Investment Performance Standards, after nearly 4 years of work by many volunteers across the industry, both internationally and in the U.S. here. The standard was designed to replace a growing number of national standards. There's all different kinds of standards, which had the same objectives, but took slightly different approaches. And this led to a difficult environment for managers in different parts of the world. It was very difficult to get a consistent spot or place where managers can go from around the world, investment managers, and see what returns we're really doing. So this led to the creation of GIPS, or the Global Investment Performance Standard, which we adhere to. We are big on the science and the academics, and there's no reason why things can't be audited and verified if, in fact, you're sticking to a science and not just a creative story. So let's talk a little bit about GIPS, G-I-P-S, Global Investment Performance Standard. The key principles of GIPS was that it was to establish an ethical standard and the purpose of ensuring full disclosure and fair presentation of a firm's performance track record. And this was in order to achieve this firm's, they're required to satisfy some very stringent but minimum requirements. An example, how we do it. Every account that we have is audited every month for returns and fees. Those 12 audits are compiled for the year. A third-party auditing firm comes in and verifies that it's held to the standard that GIPS lays out, which is auditing every account monthly. Now, outfits, large outfits out there, and we're large overall, will tell you that they can't do GIPS because they have too many accounts. That's absolutely not true. It's just not inexpensive to do, okay? It's something that requires some time and effort. But to give you an idea of what they have to do, the presentation and what they have to adhere to, here's just a small example. Firms must construct composites made up of all the managed funds to provide performance rather than selecting individual accounts, which may not truly be representative of the entire population of accounts. So in other words, this approach includes all lost accounts, eliminating survivorship bias from performance history. For those of you who may not be familiar with survivorship bias, thousands of funds die every year. You don't ever hear about these funds dying off. They're generally merged into other better performing funds, and as a result, returns can be skewed and, let me say, manipulated, for lack of a better word. That seems like such a harsh word to use, but in essence, that's what seems to be happening. Now, the benefits by going through this composite, including everything, the benefits to the investor is the introduction of a standardized approach and the presentation of historic performance now removes some of the variables that were presented before. And some of those variables included selective accounts that could be picked, selective time frames and periods for calculating actual returns. So that's really eliminated some of the accounting creativity that was practiced. That is, if they're GIPS compliant. Now, in order to be verified as a GIPS compliant, it is a totally independent verification claim, firm's claims compliance process. Verification needs to be undertaken by an organization that's independent. GIPS compliance creates structures for the calculation and presentation of performance, which removes inconsistencies of presentation, and there's an absolute verification and clarity of what the net returns are. Here's the thing, you know, as compliance creates things like this, technology and this type of stuff creates GIPS, for example, as this type of compliance creates benefits for both prospective and existing clients, then a better question might be, why is an investment manager or a firm out there not GIPS compliant? If a firm is genuinely compliant, they can be reasonably expected to verify what they claim. And this is one thing that's always frustrated me. In fact, this is one of the major items that almost created an exodus for me many years ago from this industry, when I started realizing the smoke and mirrors and some of the different things that goes on and the perception that the public has and the reality of what's going on behind the scenes is dramatically different. This is what my whole firm, the whole reason for financial abundance came about. Education clarity leads to confidence. You don't need to know everything, just a few right things. If you have an investor coach pulling back the curtain and exposing the truth about money and investing. If you're dealing in a fee-only environment, you don't have to worry about a sales process. You don't have to worry about a creative story. If you're sticking to fees and science, ladies and gentlemen, investing is relatively simple. You see, in our firm, we don't claim to know what's going to happen in the future. And we would submit that anyone who claims to know in the future is either ignorant or devious. What we do know is what the science has dictated in the last 50 years has been proven and continually reported on from sources like the University of Chicago and Wharton and Benheim Center for Research in Princeton and on and on and on. And when you start to look at the science, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to have creative stories about managers and stocks and returns and market timing when you're sticking to the science. GIPS is an example of sticking to the science. With that being said, I think I've talked long enough for one day. This is Paul Nichols, president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisory firm in State College, Pennsylvania. If you'd like to learn more about what we do and how we do it, check out our website, FAICoach.com. That's Financial Abundance Incorporated, coach.com, FAICoach.com. Or if for some reason you've gotten a hold of this and not access to the web and you need a phone number because you're old school, which is totally cool because I'm old school too, go ahead and call us direct, 866-867-5745, 866-867-5745. Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, signing off. Have a great day. We'll talk to you next time.